Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. I'm here today with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we had a discussion. We were quite excited. We don't have a guest today, which puts us in a special position. We get to speak directly to you about what's on our mind and what we've been seeing and what our medical and clinical observations are, and we get to share them directly with you. And that's always fun for us. I always love it. But Carol and I had a little debate before coming into this show. Carol's been studying aluminum and its effects on the body. And I've been in my office seen patients. So I said, let's focus the show on office visits and what I'm seeing coming to me. And she said, let's focus the show on aluminum and how that affects us and our brain and our bodies and how we're getting it. So, and what we can do about it. You know, there's a lot of things we realize are a problem, but we really can't deal with them without incredible interventions. Well, this one we can do something about. So we decided, why don't we do both? We'll do both. This is going to be a fun show. Because Carol, I want, if you don't mind, I'd love you to take the lead on aluminum and give us some guidance and we'll go back and forth on it.
Well, I would love to. And the reason I hit on aluminum has to do with co-chairing a medical conference the first part of October on vaccines and immunology. And one of our guest speakers is Christopher Exley. So this person was recommended by the co-chair, and I didn't know his work. And Christopher Exley is a PhD. He works in Great Britain. He has spent the last four decades of his professional life working on aluminum. And I go, goodness, whoever imagined you could focus in on that. He's written about 200 papers. He's got a book that has some discussions. And this is a book I read. Imagine you are an aluminum atom. Aluminum is the most prevalent metal or substance in the Earth's crust, and we're exposed to it all the time. But it's only been in recent history that we have devised many things that brings aluminum into our bodies.
So
prior to this time frame, no aluminum in our system.
So prior to this, we were able to, although we were in contact with it, we were able to resist absorption. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate. There is no function in the human body that's dependent on having aluminum in it. Any aluminum inside your body is an unnatural situation. So this is quite a body of work. So how do we start getting all this aluminum inside our bodies? And it's myriad. For instance, Corinne, do you remember It's already been years ago. I remember reading how dangerous aluminum pots were.
Oh, and I,
of course, got rid of my aluminum. I don't use that in cooking.
Yes, but...
How about you?
Well, no, I do not use aluminum. There's no aluminum in my house for cooking. But I remember the pots that were everywhere. Even recently, relatively recently, I was at someone's house and I walked through their garage and there was a big aluminum pot for water for the dogs. And it was sitting there. And I could see into the water and there were crystals on the bottom of the pot. So what was happening? Our water is more acidic than it used to be. And that water sitting in that pot is breaking down the aluminum pot. Now, just think about this. When I was kids, we used to have aluminum cups and glasses that we would go outside with by the pool. They were cold in our hands or hot in our hands because aluminum is a great conductor. But also, I would go to people's houses and there'd be a big pot of sauce, which is somewhat acidic, on the stove cooking. And sauce cooks for a day.
Tomato sauce.
And just leaching that aluminum into the food that was being so lovingly and painstakingly made. Go on, Carol. Can you explain more to us?
Yeah, here's another thing with the aluminum around our food. How about aluminum foil, which is pervasive? And my family used to grill out, and we'd make these pouches of maybe a fish fillet and a few vegetables and lemon and spices.
Lemon.
And we'd wrap that up and put it on the grill.
Oh, that's really common. I see that. I watch cooking shows for my hobby is watching cooking shows. And I see that all the time where they wrap food in aluminum and put it on the grill or even bake with it. What about putting the aluminum sheet over the turkey so it doesn't burn as it's cooking inside?
I know. And then you get... You know, at the end, you get these little holes, even in the aluminum.
Oh, yes.
It's been eaten away. You can see it right in front of your eyes.
And that's taking the aluminum and bringing it into either vapor or dust, which then we consume. Now, does our microbiome, the change in our microbiome, have anything to do with the absorption of increased absorption of aluminum? I know it has to do with increased absorption of mercury, but how does aluminum fit into this picture, or does it?
Oh, that's a good question. And I didn't particularly read about the microbiome in Dr. Exley's book, although he did touch upon my favorite subject, which is hormones. He said aluminum acts as a metalloestrogen. And I actually wrote a newsletter on metalloestrogens and some of the heavy metals, and like mercury was featured in that, sit on estrogen receptors. And now, it's apparent that aluminum does this too. And when it sits on that receptors, it activates an estrogen response. And this means even though this is not estrogen, it is making you feel like you have an excess load of estrogen. And that's a problem because that doesn't show up on any hormone test. Your doctors are going to say you're normal or maybe don't even have enough, yet your body has to cope with this big estrogen response. So it's something we're not measuring and could be a problem. People are unbalanced hormonally. So that's a big thing.
Now,
let's switch over to water.
Okay. Okay.
We use all our water systems, the various municipal water systems. They put aluminum sulfate in the water to clarify it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So it's not cloudy. But now you're getting a big dose of aluminum. And I wanted to bring up what you said again about the food getting much more aluminum absorbed onto it under acidic conditions. It's true of your body. We have a lot in the non-allopathic medicine world about keeping your body alkaline. I even read a book some time ago. It was called Alkalize or Die.
I remember that. And it was so radical at that time.
But some of the principles pertain here, because if you choose to eat foods that are considered more alkaline, and the bulk of those are vegetables and fruits, you will absorb less aluminum into your body than if you were eating a highly acidic, high sugars, maybe more meat than your body can process, would cause you to be more acidic. Now, I don't want to go into that right now because there's arguments if this is the right terminology or what, but foods do have a role to play here on how you absorb the foods. And then another thing that has happened to our food sources, even though I said stick with vegetables and fruit,
is that the vegetables, the vegetables now have more aluminum in them. Because the rain is acidic that is falling on them, which is allowing a higher absorption of the aluminum into the vegetables. So we've got a whole circle here. And our absorption, our ability to take this up into our cells, is also based on an acidity. And so here we are, we're acidic in our cells. Our food is slightly more acidic than it was, maybe even a half of a point, which is, changes the ability of the aluminum to go up the roots into the vegetable. And we've got a full circle here that we have to break. We have to find the base and break it. Go on, Carol.
Okay, this one shocked me so much, I immediately had to call a friend who I know has friends. So it was about vaping. And Dr. Exley's group actually took a look at this, e-cigarettes and vaping. And what he found was that the solutions that they used, the ones they tested, were free from aluminum, yet the vapor coming out was full of aluminum.
How could that be? Could you explain that, to us?
That was the device.
The device was leaching.
Was leaching aluminum. So if that's part of what you do in your life, please, please, please look at what that instrument is made of. You don't have to have an aluminum base one. There are other things. Stainless steel, for example, is safe. But when you're doing those vapors, this is particularly dangerous because you're inhaling those vapors. It can go right into your brain, through your nostrils. It can be going right into your lungs, easily taken up by the body. So it's like giving yourself almost an intravenous aluminum shot, a treatment. This is really, really serious. So I was particularly shocked.
Now, there are other very essential ways that we get aluminum directly into our body, aren't there, Carol?
Yes, and one of these ways is through vaccines. And many, but not all, vaccines have aluminum in it and some sort of an aluminum salt. And the purpose of that aluminum in those vaccines is to create an enhanced response to whatever else is in that vaccine. You can inject the virus all by itself into your body, nothing will happen. But if you add the aluminum, it gives your body a danger signal. So your body starts making antibodies, and that's what they consider a success with vaccines. However, this brings aluminum injected right into your body, and you do have some defense mechanisms in your gastrointestinal tract, but you have none with a direct injection.
So and that's what's called an adjuvant.
That's right. What that is, as
Carol explained, it's a stimulant to react. They use aluminum for that. They use albumin also. That's why so many people are becoming allergic to eggs, because they're becoming allergic to the albumin, the white of the egg, due to the fact that they've been injected with it. But they also use mercury for that. So we have three, just a minimum of three. There's many more that are being injected to us, and they're teaching our body to react to these substances that assist the body to build up its immune response. Carol?
There's some big problems with aluminum and vaccine. We don't know how much. They tested some of the vaccines, and they found some had an amount, and when they tested it, the amount was actually higher. The industry has done no research on what amount is actually needed to produce this response, what might be the lowest dose you could use, or what range of doses. So it's a complete unregulated area in medicine that we have no good information. I think we should talk for a minute, like, what happens when you have aluminum poisoning? I already talked about what happens with your hormones. You can have a big hormone problem. But he also studied diseases, and he had opportunity to look at brains of people who died with
dementia,
Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and MS. And in each case, he found in different parts of the brains, and actually connected to different brain proteins that would tend to cluster in different areas, that those people who had those diseases, their brain tissue held a huge amount of aluminum in their brains. And again, consider what we said at the beginning of the show. Aluminum has no function in the human body, and we live for millennia without having any aluminum inside of it.
And
so when you are exposed and you pick this up, where does it go? And it gets stashed in various parts of your body. So the prime things are neurological symptoms.
So what happens is our nerves are some of our longest-lived cells in the body. As a result, they accumulate aluminum. So what we're seeing with this aluminum toxicity is very large numbers of neurologic diseases that we're really not identifying any cause, because nobody's doing any heavy metal testing or doing any type of chelation. What other symptoms would we see with elevated aluminum, Carol?
Well, we would have difficulty in our gait and our physicality, but we'd have brain disorders, like you mentioned, dementia, not identified as Alzheimer's yet, and an inability to fully function. And you have this going on in a steady decline, because the longer you're around, the bigger your burden of aluminum tends to be. But I think we should switch over to what can you do about it.
Well, first of all, you know, that brings me back to a thought. You know, when I first started to work with or assist Dr. Atkins, the first thing he did, every patient that walked in his door, almost everyone, he had printed prescription sheets for chelation or detox. He would first test patients for heavy metals, and then he would start detoxing them for heavy metals. And nothing is 100% anywhere, but particularly in your medical office. But he had a tremendous response with patients getting better just by removing heavy metals. So what you're really saying, and what we're saying, is that these hidden chronic diseases with these unknown causes, we better be looking at a heavy metal burden and begin to start detoxing ourselves, because this is serious, it's continuous, it's chronic, and we know that it has affinity for nerve cells. So there you are with a very serious neurologic disease and no cause, none at all. But yet nobody's looking at the metal, at the metals. Yeah. Nobody's even looking at them. So how can you find that as a cause if you don't look there? But there are ways to block aluminum absorption, aren't there, Carol?
Well, one of the things to do is to avoid aluminum as much as you can. And just as another thing, they put aluminum in as coloring agents, in pills and pharmaceuticals.
Oh, yes.
They put it into powders. Your whey protein powder may have aluminum in it to be an anti-caker, so the powder doesn't cake together. So what's the good of that? They actually put it in baby formulas.
In what?
Soy ones, baby formulas, the powdered baby formula for those who aren't breastfeeding and they want to feed their baby. There's some soy-based ones that are particularly high in aluminum.
That enrages me.
That, it also enrages me. And aluminum has been put into sunscreens, and there's at least one study correlating an increased rate of melanoma with sunscreen use. And it's thought that it's from the aluminum in the sunscreen. So, here's the big one.
Deodorant.
Antiperspirant.
I know.
You know, aluminum chlorhydrate, it's a double whammy. Why is it a double whammy? Because your aluminum is absorbed through your skin. And also, because you stop sweating with the salt,
it blocks
your natural
sweat glands.
Methods, yeah. You are like turning off your ability to sweat it out. So heavy metals, here's where sauna comes in. Heavy metals can leave your body if you sweat. So exercising so produces sweat. Or when it's hot enough, I can just use my computer and I sit here and sweat. And I don't mind. I'm just saying to myself, I wonder how many toxic solvents and metals I'm getting.
That's one way of thinking of it. But you know what? There's another piece that we need to understand, that women naturally sweat 50% less than males. So it's very important for us women to encourage sweating. I know it's not that attractive, but we can do it through saunas. We can do it through exercise. We can do it through stress, but we don't want to do it that way. And as Carol was saying, understand that as you're sweating, you're releasing toxins. And that's an essential piece of why we sweat. And blocking those sweat glands is not the best way to maintain an attractive appearance. But there are other ways to excrete and block aluminum absorption. As we said before, alkaline. When the body is alkaline, it doesn't absorb aluminum easily. But there's specific foods you can eat that are high in silica, and silica binds with aluminum and moves it out of the body, and it's very effective. There's some very specific silica supplements. There's two that I know of right off the hat that I use regularly, and I'll tell you them. One is called Biosil. It's a liquid, and you put it under your tongue. The reason why it's sold is to build bone, to strengthen bone and strengthen hair and help skin. But then there's another one called Regenimax. These two were from Germany and given out in Germany as a prescription for arthritis and arthritic and joint pain, to bring down the inflammation of joint pain. So those are two things to look at. They're direct silica there, but they have something else, because silica sometimes is hard to absorb. They are phosphocholine bound. So the silica is bound to a fat, so the body is able to absorb it more easily. So these are two good formulas, but there's some foods too. And I think I said them. Green beans are really important. As a matter of fact, last night I went out and picked green beans from my garden. But then when I came in, so a friend of mine had cooked some food for me, knowing that I work late, brought it over, and guess what it was wrapped with?
Aluminum foil.
Here I did this whole show on the dangers of aluminum foil, and I come home and my food is wrapped in aluminum. Oh my goodness. So what other foods, Carol, would be important to make sure we have in our diets?
Well, this is actually what Dr. Exley studied in his lab. They're waters that are naturally high in silica, and two of them right off the top of my head are Voss and Fiji. And
those are alkaline waters, aren't they?
And they're alkaline too, yeah. So the amount of water they used in the study was a liter and a half per day. And they measured the success of this both by measuring urine. In fact, Dr. Exley goes through a great bit of detail. How can we measure what the body burden is? And the best available right now is a 24-hour urine collection for aluminum. And after drinking this water, or during the time that these people were drinking the water, their aluminum was measured in the urine, and it would be radically increased from not drinking the water. So they were able to get rid of some aluminum. And this did correspond with some clinical response, where people were doing better drinking this water. Another interesting thing I thought to bring up is diatomaceous earth.
That's interesting.
I was told about diatomaceous earth by a nurse practitioner I met at a conference, and she did medical missions to Guatemala, and she said, I always use diatomaceous earth. I just put a quarter teaspoon into powder, mix it in water, drink it up. And she said, I never get sick. And the diatomaceous earth counters parasites and stuff. It kind of is little prickly stuff, and it tears up these parasitic organisms. So she kept herself healthy with that. But diatomaceous earth, I've used it in my home to, like, spread on carpet so the moths won't eat it. They don't like diatomaceous earth either. And I've used it, as she says, just a little bit in water to drink it down. I imagine you could find capsules. And it's an important source of silica.
Do you know who used to love diatomaceous earth and used it in a large number of her protocols? And that was Sherry Lieberman. And she taught me about diatomaceous earth. And it's an important mineral to use when attempting to block and excrete parasites, because it absorbs fluid. And in that, it literally dehydrates and kills any live bugs or worms or even cysts. that happen to be in the intestinal cavity. And so it can be very, very effective added to any protocol that you're using for parasites. So it's interesting that that nurse practitioner was aware of that, and she was bringing it with her to Guatemala. So we're about in the middle of the show, Carol. Is there anything else you want to say? Because I want to go into clinical, straight clinical.
All right. I think we're ready for a switch. I hope people have seen the red flag, avoid aluminum, take the opportunity to sweat, use some of the silica-containing foods and water to help remove aluminum, and I think you can be in pretty good shape. So let's get on to what you're seeing in your practice that has you all excited.
Well, I have a few things. I have one that it might just be an anomaly, but it's so profound. I mean, by an anomaly, I mean that reproducing this might be very difficult because the uniqueness of how you get there, there can be hundreds of ways to get into this symptomatic pattern. And if the practitioner happens to hit that way, then there can be a very large success. But if they don't, if they're going along other pathways, it seems like it's just not working. So what I've been working with, one, is I've been referred to me two Alzheimer's patients diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I've been having so much fun working with them because their success, what I'm seeing them come back. I'm seeing them respond. I'm seeing them write, which they both said they couldn't write. I'm giving them poems like Dr. Seuss poems and having them read to me while I'm working with them. They both said they couldn't read. And I'm also challenging them because one of the patients said to me, wait a minute, I have a brain disease and that's what I have and it's irreversible and this is what I have and there's no way to deal with it. Now, that's what she said when she first came in. Now, when that's said, what I understand is that I have a patient that's not really willing to work with me because they've accepted their diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We all know people that they're told, go home, get your affairs together, you have 6 months to live. And they say, baloney, I'm not going to live 6 months. And they start doing this and looking into holistic care and they change their diet and they begin to exercise. And now it's 2.5 years later and they defy statistics. And that's where I wanted these patients to go to. I wanted them to say, I want this. I want to be healthy and fight with me their way back. And to some degree, what happens when people start losing their memory and losing their mind, first of all, they feel frightened. And so they walk into my office looking scared. But second of all, more than that, they feel pretty hopeless. They've taken medicines that hasn't worked, doesn't help. They've done multiple things, and at least some of them. And here they are. It doesn't work. We all know that this is the diagnosis, and it can't be changed. So one of my jobs is working with them to say, wait a minute, I don't care what the diagnosis is. This is what I want. And understand that they could build their brain function and their neuron function with working and working on themselves. So every week I bring them these little computer games that they work on at home, putting words together. Every week I'm like a tough grade school teacher. Where's your daily diary? Hey, there's a day missing here. What happened on that day? You got to help me out. I don't understand. If I don't understand, how can I help you? Let's go over and let's remember that day. And I literally work with them to remember that day. But along with that, I'm doing, as we discussed, heavy-duty chelation. So I'm pulling metals out. Even if their profile didn't say they had a lot of metals, I'm pulling them out anyway. Because we know that there's some people at low amounts are very, very sensitive. And some people at higher amounts have no effects at all. It's very unique to the individual. So I'm working with them within that to draw out their metals. I'm re-nourishing their neurons by giving them lipoic acid. I am working with their diet, which is literally one of the hardest things to do. It's really hard to get a cleaner diet. They don't have bad diets. Mm-hmm. But we need a better diet, because we need a diet that puts them in, and this goes into the next side of my clinical, that puts them into autophagia, which means their body for energy is using its own dead cells. And It's literally cleaning up. It cleans up plaques in the brain. It cleans up broken, defective neurons. It cleans up broken, defective muscle cells when you go into that phase. And so when you do that, when you work with patients and you get them into autophagia and you start giving them good fats, you give them MCT oil, which is medium chain triglycerides. You give them butter. You give them coconut oil and olive oil and get them eating avocados. What you're doing is you're just nourishing those neurons. You're getting rid of the old broken ones and you're nourishing the neurons. And you begin to see changes. Not 100%. There's nothing that is 100%. But at least it's a direction. There's a Dr. Bredesen who...
Dale Bredesen, the end of Alzheimer's.
The end of Alzheimer's. And he wrote a book. And I've got that book front in my office out there like a shining star. And he is the one that first wrote... He's a psychiatrist at UCLA doing lots of studies. And he was the one that first wrote a book and said, the end of Alzheimer's. You don't need to have Alzheimer's. It's a combination of toxicities, hormone imbalance, nutrient imbalance, and it goes on. And what happens with that is when you start putting these pieces together, a new person emerges. So, but speaking of autophagy, I want to talk about one other thing that just is pleasing me so much. I'm just so excited. It makes me excited to go to the office. Is that I'm working, well, you know, I've always worked with diet. And part of the reason that I've been so interested in working with diet is because I've always had a tendency to be fighting my weight, always. When I was younger, I had a tendency and a need to fight my weight. My father died of diabetic complications. I, of all four of my brothers and sisters, had a need to fight my weight more than they did. And mm-hmm. so it's always been my life challenge. Everybody has different life challenges. This one is mine. So it always interested me. I started out with all those diets and the drinks and all that, and I was good at it. I could get people to lose large amounts of weight on those things. And then the minute they went off of them, within 6 months, their weight came back. So I became so frustrated. I said, I won't deal with those drinks. I won't deal with all these diet drinks. Not at all. Not in my practice at all. And I'm really not going to deal with diet. I'm going to deal with health. Only health. And if people lose weight while they get healthier, that's an added benefit. But at the same time, it's not what I'm focusing on, number one. So, but now what has happened is the work of Dr. Jason Fung and many others. Yes, I can name him a few, but I think he was one of the pioneers. Okay. He really explained very directly how insulin was toxifying our bodies, our brain, everything, how it was changing our hormones, changing our fertility, and that we, through our intake, can 100% control our insulin levels. So yes, insulin is out of control, but let's look down the line there. So is our eating. So we've got it lined up. Yeah. We got a line right there, direct cause and effect. It's not an assumptive effect. It's a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you start changing your eating, the insulin changes. And Jacob Teitelbaum, a regular guest on this show, has written a little book called Diabetes is Your Choice. Mm-hmm. And so he also, although he approaches it differently, believes that we can 100% control our insulin. And Jason Fung said it isn't the sugar, it's the insulin, but the insulin is then reacting to the sugar. So what am I doing? I'm working with intermittent fasting. I love it. It's so much fun. It's so easy to work with intermittent fasting. It's so easy. And the results are amazing. I'll tell you a few of them, but
define what you're doing, because there's a lot of intermittent fasting programs.
I know. It's all, and guess what? Most of them are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be mine or nothing, my program or nothing, or this way or nothing. That's the beauty of this way of eating. It rotates, it changes as your life changes. But there are certain rules that are essential, and then it goes on and gets more sophisticated. But the first rule is zero zip, no snacking. Mm-hmm. And that's essential. You know, for years I've been telling you and the audience that the worst thing that ever happened is when the food industry literally taught us to snack. And that's when everything went out. And guess what? We don't snack on healthy foods. We snack on carbs. And we never give our bodies a chance, or intestines a chance, or our insulin a chance to rest, to come back down.
A woman who, in spite of a rule, no eating at your desk, had drawers full of stuff, and they were all cookies, crackers, candies, stuff like that. And I said to her, you can't have that. You can't be eating at your desk. And she said, I have to. I'm hypoglycemic.
That is.
But yeah, you are hypoglycemic, because every single one of those carb snacks you're having is throwing you into a big blood sugar rise and the corresponding big insulin rise. And then everything crashes. and you're hungry again, and you absolutely have to eat, and you eat something that puts you in the same roller coaster all day long. And of course, she was overweight and sometimes testy because blood sugar swings can make you very moody. So this is an example of how we've been
taught
to do that stuff with all this carb snacky stuff appealing to us, tastes wonderful. We get an initial hit. It's probably like cocaine, gives you some satisfaction, but that's soon dragged down, and you've got to do it again.
Wow. That's perfect example, an absolutely perfect example of what we're talking about. And that's what I try to pull people out of. And at first, sometimes on some people, it's quite difficult. So I do it slowly. I don't dive in. I see on the internet people read one book and then started totally fasting and now are 40 pounds lighter and never felt better. I don't want to hear that. It doesn't interest me. Mostly it's steps. Just like everything else in life, it's steps. And if you don't take the time to build up and create the steps, you then set yourself up for failure. So I start people very gently. The first thing I do is I say, no, zip, zero snacking at all. Well, what am I going to eat for comfort food? You're going to eat dinner. And then you're going to stop eating. So the first thing I do is I stop them from snacking, and I find and attempt to find an earlier dinner hour if possible for them. But if not possible, I stick with what they have. They eat dinner to satisfaction. Not to stuffing, but to satisfaction. And that's another interesting point, because people don't understand the difference. You know, when I was brought up, I was taught to stop eating when I was stuffed. We used to have homemade pasta. My grandma would make it, and it'd be drying in the bedroom on the sheets. It's real. We used to have the big pots of sauce, and then the meat, and then the vegetable. And by then, we little kids, we were stuffed. But guess what? In minutes, out came the desserts, which were all homemade. And delicious. They were made with butter and with non-hybrid wheat and not sprayed. So it was absolutely delicious. But I was satisfied at the end of pasta. All the rest of the food I didn't really need. See, it takes your body about 20 minutes from the time you feel satisfied to the time your brain knows that you're full. Mm-hmm. And so what you have to do is start listening to yourself and start judging your diet on being satisfied, not being full. So you walk away. How many people, you know, after those Sunday dinners, all the men used to lie on the couches, sleep and snore heavily, because we were all so stuffed. The kids would be outside playing or sitting around. Then the men would get up and play cards every single Sunday. But what was happening? They were literally trying to sleep off this very large, excessive amount of food that they were taking in. Now, when you eat to satisfy, what happens is that you get up and your stomach isn't all bloated at all. You just feel good. And I remember when my husband and I first got together, I said, oh, I hate eating dinner because I always feel so bad after dinner. Well, because I ate too much. And I didn't eat to satisfy. So you know, that Jason Fung talks about and directs every, so everybody to understanding insulin and how it has effects on every part of the body, from the brain to the muscle, but also to fertility. So recently I had a patient, a young lady, beautiful young lady, not fat, 5 pounds overweight, maybe 6. So she had a beautiful curvy body. And she was told by her gynecologist that she could not get pregnant, zip, not, and was given a diuretic because she had polycystic ovary disease. And I told her, listen, let's see what we can do. You know, I can't make promises, but let's see what we can do. And so we put her on this intermittent fasting, but also we added to that keto. So within her intermittent fasting, when she decided to eat, she would eat to satisfaction vegetables, protein, fat. So she'd have olive oil, she'd have butter, she'd have coconut oil, all the oils I spoke of before, no toxic oil, zero, none. And the end result was she lost her 5-7 pounds. She looked fabulous, stunning. And one day I look in my messages and there's a picture of a little pink line on this little tube. She was pregnant 2.5 months later after she started the intermittent fasting. And
whoa, that's exciting.
Oh my goodness, I was jumping up and down. She was told she couldn't get pregnant. So that's just one little piece, but I'm seeing people 1 week on intermittent fasting and the brain fog clears that they've had for the last 3 years. How could that be? How could it be so profound? That's the part I'm so excited about. I'm watching it develop. And I'll have more to report later on. Carol, guess what?
Oh, we're at the end of our time.
I think I got on a roll, Carol. You should have stopped me. Hey, quiet.
But well, there's a lot more to say about that. So we probably should try go over some of these things at another week and go into much more detail because it is exciting. And certainly since I found about Jason Fung and we brought him to our program, he changed my mind completely about a lot of things. And it just goes to show there are some things that are going on right in front of your nose and you're not paying attention. Things that don't make sense, like why should we all be on this death march to diabetes and Alzheimer's? Why are we not questioning what's the underlying cause? Loved when you said, guess what? Insulin's directly affected by what you're putting in your mouth. we have tools. We can take charge of our health. So let's do it. We only need the information. That was really exciting, Corinne.
Yeah, it makes me excited to go into work to see all the changes and how people are getting better. But I get busy, I get tired. People say, how are you? I said, I'm excited. I'm in my office just totally excited watching people getting better. What better job is there?
Right. Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. So I want to invite you, the audience, please write on our Facebook any questions you might have about this and or other talks we've given or what you want to hear in the future. You know, you are our guide. We do this for you, not for us. We do it for you, and we'll be glad to respond. Carol, what's our Facebook?
Our Facebook page is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol.
That's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You can do that. So give us a holler and let us know what you want to hear. Thank you, Carol. Every time we're together, I always learn. Aluminum, aluminum, aluminum.
And I hope our audience finds a pearl in our program.
Oh, I know they do, because I hear from them. They call my office, and I know they do. But don't even hear the pearls. Take them and use them. They're yours. We're giving these jewels to you. So thank you so much for being with us for this hour, and we'll be back next week. Bye, Carol.
Bye, Corinne.
See you next week. So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.